And gentlemen, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to recommend to you our temporary chairman, the former president of the United States, Harry S. Truman.
The statesman, the former president, is mounting the speaker's rostrum to deliver the keynote address. Mr. Truman is expected to revert to his old firebrand style for his address. Fever has been running high as this is the opening session of the convention. Lexington Mayor Paul A. Holstein was able to get only so far as his greeting to the delegates and guests before he was interrupted by a standing applause. Mayor Holstein said, "This is a great and momentous occasion." And indeed it is, for this is the most successful mock convention in the country. This is the 12th of the series. In past conventions, delegates have nominated the correct candidate 7 out of 11 times. The convention was right in 1952 with Eisenhower and again in 1956 with Stevenson for the Democrats.
If we could have just gotten the president to attend to those Missouri mules, he would have exhibited the kind of character he had. Friends, I have great pride in the years of my association with your keynoter. In those years, I came to know firsthand his faith in America and its people, his great courage, the vigor and sweep of his mind, and the sure sense of national direction at a time of great doubts and great confusion in the world. As you students of history surely know, the great and the fundamental turnings in the direction of man to human betterment. The United Nations, the Marshall Plan, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, the Declaration as to Greece and Turkey, the Berlin Airlift, the Point Four Program, and the defense of Korea against communist aggression. These, my fellow Democrats, are proud monuments of this man and the permanent turnings of human history from despair to hope. And finally, the monuments to his leadership. Most appropriately, your keynote speaker is a great Democrat. In his burning faith in our party and its responsibility for the future, he personifies the Democratic Party. Delegates of this convention, I have the honor to present to you the 32nd President of the United States, the Honorable Harry S. Truman.
President Truman has just entered the speaker's rostrum. He's now using the gavel, and I don't think it's going to be a very short while before this convention all quiets down. The band is now playing the Washington Elise Wing, and the place is absolutely in an uproar. That is exactly a mild statement if I ever heard before. Signs waving, hats flying. And, of course, people at the top of their lungs. Cries go up. Get some of the flavor of this convention, ladies and gentlemen. Dixie in the background.
I've been looking at them since 1912. Now, you don't know how wonderfully I feel because you asked me to come to this wonderful school. I don't know whether that's a boo or a cheer, which is... two of my great heroes, George Washington and Robert E. Lee. Washington, of course, was one of the greatest of the great presidents. He established the government, one of the most difficult things in history for a man to do. And he established a government that remained a government. Now, of course, you people here know all about Washington. I don't have to talk about him very much. And you should know all about Robert E. Lee. Who's the greatest of the great in military affairs, and not only that. He was the greatest of the great in creating young men into citizens of the greatest republic in the history of the world. Now, I'm hopeful, I'm very hopeful, that you young men will follow in the footsteps of those two great men for which this university is named. My one regret in life is it was not my privilege to be able to go through a university and earn a degree. Now, I have more degrees than most anybody else in this country, except some other presidents who've received them. I've come to the conclusion that maybe I earned them. I don't know for sure whether I did. I was very much intrigued with that parade this afternoon. Enjoyed it very much. I've marched in more parades than there are young men in this audience. And I've reviewed more parades than that. And I still like to see a parade, and if you'd let me, I'd pull those mules out of that trouble for you. couldn't do it. Mule language is not proper for a polite audience. Your arrangements here have been very efficient. In fact, I wish that the National Democratic Committee chairman would invite you out there to arrange the convention in Los Angeles. I know you're doing it. I told you a while ago that I'd had some experience in conventions. My first convention was in 1900. I heard the convention of 1896 over the telegraph thing here, you see. But I was a page in the convention of 1896. It was 1900 I was a page. I heard the 1896 convention, but in 1900, I was a page in the convention, which elected William Jennings Bryan the second time. And they had an opening. They didn't have these things in those days. And they had an old man who was a governor of Ohio, and his name was Judson Harmer. He was making the speech. I was sitting over here in a box where the pages were kept, and we could see and you couldn't hear a word. William Jennings Bryan walked onto the platform, and he said, "My friends," and you could hear him way up in the corner, but in a hall that held 17,000 people, "I will appreciate it very much if you'll give the governor of Ohio a chance to make his speech." They didn't do it. He's a fine man, but he didn't have the voice, so he had to sit down. Wouldn't listen to anybody but Bryan, and he was unanimously nominated. Then the next convention that I had a hand in listening to was the convention of 1912. Happened along in July, about wheat cutting time. And I was driving a binder with four mules. That's the reason I knew what to do with these mules out here. Around a 160-acre field, and over about a quarter of a mile was a little telegraph station. We didn't have any broadcasts or anything of that kind in those days. And every time I'd make a round of that about a mile and a half field, I would stop and go over and see how the convention was coming. And when the time came, when the breakup took place, when Mr. Bryan made his speech, I didn't cut any more wheat. I went and put the horses away and went over to the telegraph station and stayed there. I had two horses and two mules on that binder. I don't want to be inconsistent. Now, it's your business. It's your business. As the coming generation who are going to be in charge of the government of this great country, the greatest government in the history of the world. Get your ideas in line so you can carry on that republic in the manner in which it was intended to be carried on when the Constitution was adopted. Now, that Constitution and this government was brought to life in a period of strife, and it's had crisis after crisis. You know, it took us 80 years to find out whether we wanted that sort of a government and that Constitution. And we had to whip ourselves before we did it. We finally came through that. And we are in another right at this minute. And I want you to understand that. And I want you to inform yourselves so when it comes your time to make the decisions, you can make them and keep this country running. Never was anything like it. It's the oldest government in the world. Do you know that? This United States government is the oldest one in the world. These party conventions, of which you were a sample, were organized after the Congress was unable to meet the necessities of the period. Jackson decided that he'd been cheated out of the election in 1924. So he organized a convention and was nominated and was elected. And George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Andrew Jackson and one or two others I'll name to you sometime were among the most abused presidents because they did things. A man doesn't do anything, there's nothing to say about him, so there's no abusing. And then in 1854, there was a general by the name of John C. Fremont who thought he was a hero. And he did think so. I don't know, maybe. We've got them right today. So I know some people who think they're heroes, but they're not. He called a convention in Michigan, and he organized the Republican Party. They lifted that name from Thomas Jefferson's Republican Democratic Party. Yes, they did. They stole that. And it's always been a party privilege. You know what made that party up? The Democratic Party was made up of the people who were wanted to be a part of the government as it was intended in the first place. Are several presidents who have saved the Democratic Party, and among them are Jackson and Cleveland and Woodrow Wilson. The same situation with which they were faced is facing us now. You want to know that a brass halo hero and a do-nothing management with the executive can ruin a country. And we've had that time and again. Wayne Marsh was on the radio the other night. Oh, it's been a year ago or more. And that Spivak, whose approach I don't very much appreciate, asked the senator from Oregon the most outstanding thing that the president of the United States had done since he'd been in office. Wayne didn't draw a long breath. He said he's made a statesman out of General Grant. Same policy that old man Biddle had when Jackson moved the financial center of the United States from Philadelphia to Washington. Biddle was an example that these Republicans liked to follow. Then after that time, along came Andrew Mellon in 1921. I was a victim of old Andy Mellon. I went busted under him. And Franklin Roosevelt pulled us out of that situation. Now, I wonder if any of you know what made up the organization of the Republican Party in 1856 in Michigan.
Jackass.
No. Jackasses belong to the Democratic Party. What are you talking about? Here. It was made up of the leftovers from the Federalists and the Whigs, and made up principally of know-nothings, and it's been that way ever since. At the present time, 8 years of Republican rule in the White House has brought back Biddle and Mellon and the present Treasury policy. That policy has ruined the farmer, instituted government by veto, one-third plus one, and they think that's a great thing. I'd be ashamed of it if it was me. Return the financial policy to the moneylenders. Gets all measures for the people and they are for privilege, special privilege, and any other kind of privilege they can find. Now, I'll give you an example. The Democratic Congress passed a bill for the purification of water. Streams in this country have become polluted by the dumping things from cities and manufacturing plants into them. And the water, in a great many cases, is unfit to drink. And the population has gone up to 180 million, and we've got to find some way to get pure water for those people.
Well,
We wanted to have an organization set up to purify that water. You know what happened to it? It got vetoed. Now that Republican Polluted Water Administration they want you to drink worms and microbes and nematodes. Do you know what a nematode is? Get you a microscope and look at the water and you'll see what it is. Instead of pure H2O, if you know what that is, I guess you do. What have they done about aid to education and housing in depressed areas, minimum wage and public health, and care for the aged? And I hate to say this because I've been very careful not to enter into it, but they've absolutely upset the foreign policy of the United States. Now, it's the most terrible thing that could happen to this country. We, as the strongest free nation in the world, are the leaders of that free world. And when we lose our friends, which we have done in South America and in Europe, are losing them fast in Europe, where can we go, or where can we go? There must be leadership in foreign policy. And I want to say to you that I don't like to talk about it, because when I was president of the United States, every Republican paper in the United States tried to tell me how to run foreign policy, and they didn't know a damn thing about it. We had a foreign policy at that time, and we had friends north and south and all over Europe and everywhere in the free world. Well, now, if you read the papers, you'll find out what's happened. My sympathies always are with the president in his position, because it's the most difficult and the hardest job in the world for any man to do. And sometime or other, when the time is right, and when we're not in a political campaign, I want to come back here and give you a lecture on the presidency and on the Constitution from the standpoint of a man who doesn't have any technical law education, but who knows how to enforce the Constitution. And then, talk to you about periods of hysteria in this country, starting at Salem, Massachusetts, and coming down to McCarthy. And sometime or other, I'll come back and tell you about it. The Democratic Party has stood for the welfare of all the people. Equal rights for all, regardless of race, creed, or color. And until we get that instituted in this country in an honest, upright way, with goodwill and common sense, some of our friends are going to leave us. I want to tell you something maybe you don't know. There are only about 700 million people of our color in the world. There are 2,400,000,000 people, and the rest of them are either brown, black, or red. And they have a head, a heart, and a constitution that is as good to them as yours is to you. And those people must understand that we in this great country honestly believe what we preach. And in order to have them believe that, we must ourselves act as we want other people to act. You know, this is a matter for your heart to settle. No, it can be settled in no other way. And it must be settled with honor and justice to everybody. And that doesn't mean that you have to associate with people that you do not want to associate with, but you must give them the same political right and the same economic right that you would like to have yourself. if you're going to have the greatest free government in the history of the world, and we have it if you just keep it up. I want you youngsters. Think and use your brains and read your history. And then this leadership of the free world, the greatest leadership that any nation in the history of the world ever had, can come back to us and be what it ought to be. Remember that. Now, you're going to nominate somebody here. We must nominate and elect an honorable man who will not try to rule by veto. A strong and able leader. We must, by all means, quit the years of drift, neglect, and indecision. A man of courage who's willing to tackle problems with courage and decision and to make decisions and not let them go by drift and default. My young friends, we can find him in the Democratic Party. Tell you why. We have the men, and we have more men aspiring to that position than we can possibly use, because you can't use but one. But the fact that we have a great many of them who are qualified and who are willing to take the risk and do the work shows that we are prepared to do it. I'm sorry to say that this Know-Nothing Republican Party has only one. Now, my young friends, this neither time nor place for me to express a preference. From our great number of able leaders, it will be the duty of the National Democratic Convention to select a leader, and that leader that the National Democratic Convention will be elected no matter who the Republicans are. Man must be a man of principle. He must be a man who knows what he believes in and who tells the people what he believes in and what he will be to maintain it. He must not be a man who looks at newspaper polls and changes his mind the next morning after he's made an announcement. I don't believe in newspaper polls. They're not worth a hoot. I know. From experience, and I'm talking from experience to you, and that's all I know how to talk about this thing. I now am going to leave it to you, the convention, as I will in Los Angeles when the time comes, to nominate a man whom we can elect. It's up to you.
Background on this convention.
In a moment, we shall return to the reports of committees on permanent organizations. But now, more of the history of the Washington and Lee Mock conventions. Back in the year 1908, more important than the contest between